This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Down. How's it going tonight? You seem like an audience that doesn't give a shit about false starts. Well, guess what? You've come to a magical place where anything can happen and always will. Welcome to the stage for the second time, Dan Harmon!
Yes, it's a little double sign for me.
We did it.
From Goldberg, a little satanic Goldberg in the... Tonight's about being comfortable with chaos. I was sitting in the back room and I was thinking like, I don't have anything. I'm kind of wrung out like a dish rag from the Oscars. This will be broadcasting a little bit after it's relevant. We don't have to talk about Seth MacFarlane all night, but because then it'll air like later and people will be like, oh, fresh.
It won't be. Well, then real quick, because I watched 45 minutes of it and that was quite enough for me. What is your takeaway from the Oscars?
I didn't look up. I didn't see what the zeitgeist or the gestalt or the...
The
Hormenhammer. Was about the whole thing, but I assume, I'm going to go ahead and guess, if I was a betting man, that it would be mixed bag, which I think is what Ryan Ridley said this morning when he came into Rick and Morty. Mixed bag, it seemed like, I mean, in the world of Oscars, you really have to close your eyes and ask yourself, like, what's the ultimate Oscars, aside from the one Hugh Jackman hosted that I wrote.
You wrote the whole Oscars?
Well, I wrote the opening thing. You know what Schraub just told me a couple of days ago? Said, I never told you this because it was going down during the whole Chevy debacle, and I figured I didn't want to put another nickel in you or give you any reason to get in any embarrassing public shenanigans. But there was this article after the Billy Crystal Oscars where some snarky blog like printed an article that said, here's the 10 things you have to do to save the Oscars. Number one. Get rid of Bruce Valanche and bring the guys back that wrote that Hugh Jackman opening. Blah 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 blah. Not a hero, the person doing this. I mean, what's he? Who cares what his opinion is? But and what are good Oscars? Who cares? But in the comment section under it, Schraub tells me Bruce Valanche signs in and says, according to Schraub, so now this is kind of urban legend because I'm quoting Schraub, who's giving me hearsay from this comment section, but something akin to, I'm very sorry that you feel I'm past my prime. I did my best. You know, those guys, we all worked on that opening together, and they're the only ones that won the Emmy because they were the ones that were credited for it. But lie, 180 degrees from the truth, lie.
Now, do people know who Bruce Valanche in the audience?
Yeah, I think he's kind of famous in the...
Are you clapping because you know who he is or clapping because you're fans of Bruce Valanche?
I think he's notorious.
Clap if you're a big Bruce Valanche fan.
I mean... He's on Hollywood Squares or was at one point. He was drawn in The Simpsons. I mean, he's an iconic non-icon. You know, he's for 15, 20 years, God knows what, he's been writing on the Oscars. But I just thought that was a weird thing because it's like in the world of writing and TV and stuff, there's always room for all kinds of revisionist kind of like, well, you know, Chris McKenna came up with that joke, but really it was my idea kind of thing. It's like you forget, you work in collaborative environments. It's like it's very easy to forget. There's a lot of like, especially if you're actually really good and collaborative, you totally forget what you wrote and what someone else wrote. But that is not. We walked into the first day of working with that guy with a finished thing because it was songs and stuff, and there were sets built that Rob made out of cardboard. So for him to say that in a comment section, I was like I thought
Dan, if you could say one word
to Bruce Valanche
right now,
liar, yes. Like weird liar. If I get two, I get two weird liar. Three, like weird liar. Weird lying, weird liar. I would build out from there until it was a buckyball of just calling him a fucking liar, like just weird, like with question marks all over it, going like why? What? I want to know. Like what? Like if you're a sociopath, then dress differently. Like if you're just an automaton that's only like this Machiavellian, the ends justifies the means, then why where did you arrive at Bruce Valanche as a persona? Like, well, how is that effective? I just like, honestly, man, that dude,
was he cool to work with? Was he a good guy backstage?
No. Like, and I'm not, you know, hey, look, I'm notoriously apparently not cool to work with. I have all kinds of stuff to argue with about that. But I mean, I think that the people that say that I'm hard to work with are themselves hard to work with. I think that they're just bummed out and they grab for the edge of the pool that's there, which is like, oh, you know, there's a bunch of people over here that also were made to feel stupid and untalented. You know what? He's crazy. Oh, it's crazy? He's crazy. Hey, everybody, he's crazy. You know, there's a bunch of really awesome people in the middle of that pool hanging out and crushing brews and broing down.
Is that how they talk in the middle of the pool?
Yeah, that's where you have the inflatable bunker, with the squirt gun mounted in it. It's like, we're having fun out there playing chicken and...
Crushing brews?
Yeah. Anyways, just weird. I don't know. Bruce Valanche, somehow, if you receive this message somehow...
And he will, apparently, because he reads comment sections on...
Yeah. I mean, I put the word... image conscious in giant quotes.
Everybody hashtag Bruce Valanche. Let's try to.
I'm inviting you down, Bruce, to explain yourself.
Defend yourself, sir.
Granted, I will say this in his defense right now, preemptively, that I did not read the source material that Rob was referring to, but and I don't really want to go digging back for conflict, but
let's do it.
Bruce, come down. Bruce, come down and let's talk about your lying liarness.
Speaking of which, did we ever get there was a chance that Chevy was going to show up on the tour at some point? He never did.
Yeah, I guess there's always a chance Chevy will show up. Like, but that was the same as on Community. Like. That was the whole point. Like, it was always a flip of a coin whether he emerged from the trailer or what his hair would look like or what would be on his face. And sometimes he'd be happy and sometimes he'd be sad and sometimes he'd be angry.
Can we call him right now?
Every time we do that stuff, it's like Vulture, HuffPo, TMZ, like they extract without context and it's like, I don't know. I sound world weary. I have no reason to be world weary. The world gave me a blowjob.
Was there any fallout? I mean, not fallout or any like reaction to when Jason Sudeikis called him as Joe Biden?
He called back. He said he left a message saying, "What was that? Was that Danny Pudi? What was that?" And then I explained to him. I said, "No, that was Jason Sudeikis from SNL and SNL Saturday Night Live." No, I'm kidding. But I wouldn't be surprised, and that would be to his credit. I mean, SNL, they adopted that at sometime during my life. Like, he would remember it.
KFC.
Yeah. But he pitched me a TV show idea. But we talked about this, didn't we? I'm world weary, man. I'm wrung out like a rag.
Why are you so weary?
Well, it's Sunday. It's after the Oscars as we record this. I'm just like, you know.
You just hung over?
Yeah. We tied one on that night. We played catchphrase till like 5 in the morning.
How'd that go?
I think I won. I don't know. Aaron just kept saying like, oh, we're playing to 20. We're playing to 30. We're playing to 40. Like, she just likes to play. And she just likes to play until I get mad.
She's playing a larger game.
Catch fight. She's catching fights in a little jar. No, it's a fun game, but you know, it's 5 a.m. and you know, it's like that game in Indiana Jones that the what's her name is playing with the shot glasses. You know, it's like catchphrase. Yeah, catchphrases like that. Like, because there's like 4 people around a table, and there's always the first person that's like. That just stop. You know, their brain stops being able to participate in catchphrase. Like they can't. They can't figure out what the things are. They just go, okay, umpire. The word is umpire. The other person says you lose. It's dumb catchphrase stories tonight at 11. You won't believe it. Dan tells all.
Bruce Valanche was right.
Anyways. Is Ryan Ridley here in the audience?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, come up here. Come up here. Our next guest is Ryan Ridley.
Oh, shit. Ryan Ridley.
Sorry, I brought you up.
As I'm walking on the moon, I met a little chick.
Ryan Ridley.
Yeah. And this is what she said to me.
Ryan is a longtime collaborator of mine, and he works over at the Rick and Morty offices right now, our Adult Swim show. We're about halfway through the run here, script-wise.
Yeah.
And I told you if you came to the show, you could come up on stage. It's the only, the only way I can get people to come. Yeah. So justify it. What do you... you got a tarantula or something? Or
I was thinking about what my angle would be. I don't really know. I guess because you said... that there's not enough neurosis on stage, so ha ha ha.
I was being sarcastic.
So I decided I'm going to not be neurotic.
Oh,
at
okay.
All.
Be suave.
Good luck. Yeah.
You kind of look like Freddie Prinze Jr.
Thank you.
Some people say.
Uh huh.
I'm bad with faces, but you don't have any warts or anything, so that makes you handsome compared to.
I have brown hair and brown eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful, dreamy, endless brown eyes.
Yeah. I notice you're staring into them a lot at work.
Yeah.
I go, Dan, what were you going to say about the story? And then.
I was kissing you by a crystal blue Italian stream.
Yeah.
How's it going working for me? How hard am I to work with?
You know, we had a little dust up, but other than that, it's pretty good.
You had a dust up?
Yeah. Well, I went on tour and I came back and I was you know, I was saying a couple of outlines needed more work, and then Ryan who had kind of like Ryan's sort of the Chris McKenna over at Rick and Morty.
What's that mean?
Well, Chris McKenna was like my right hand, the heart of the show. I would say.
I wasn't saying that out of neurosis.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's like Chris was the guy that was responsible in the absence of responsibility. You know, Justin Roiland, who co-created the show with me, he's as crazy as I am in different ways. And and you're the point man. You gotta batten down the hatches.
I'm the Wonder Bread.
Yeah,
and you guys are the peanut butter and jelly.
You gotta churn out that stuff. So you put a lot of work into an outline while I was on the road, and I came back and was like, the outline. You know, I think we need to take a step back on this one. And you went, well, I wish you would have said that a month ago. And then you started punching a black baby.
Yeah.
Is that true, Ryan? Is that true?
I wasn't punching it. Yeah, just throttling it. Not a monster. He's spinning it a little in his right. direction. Yeah. Should I elaborate?
I don't know. If you want to. I mean, you're the one who brought up the dust up.
It's not... I don't know. I thought that would be something, you know, I don't know. That's a good angle, right?
Yeah, I guess. I
Dan?
Hey, there's Abed.
Real Abed's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real Abed's here. We'll get with him in a minute, I think.
Why can't he come up here, too?
Yeah.
Dan, do you respect Ryan as an employee, as a co-worker?
Not that I care.
Yeah.
I'm confident enough in myself.
I did Water and Power, Channel 101's best series in the history of Channel 101.
Right.
With Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, we wrote many things together in front of an open laptop. Like, I don't let a lot of people come around me when I'm actually typing something on a screen. It's a big thing for me. It's like it's like pooping.
I felt good. Yeah. I felt good to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're very insecure, very conscious of how other people perceive you. It can get
who here isn't, right? I think maybe I am the Adam Goldberg if maybe just a couple things different in my life happened and, you know. Because I was a big fan of Dan's. Like, oh, I want to meet Dan and work with Dan and, you know, I don't know.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Ryan Ridley is a legacy comedy personality. His dad, Mark Ridley, founded and runs the Chicago Comedy Castle.
It's Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. So when you were growing up, you know, Tim Allen would be like,
yeah. I saw a Tiger game with him.
Crashing on the couch after a weekend long Coke bender.
We had a lot of tools at the house.
Yeah, man. Yeah, like little straws and razor blades, those kind of tools. That's what tool time was back then.
There was always a guy peering over something. You only saw from here.
This dealer. What's going on? That's the inside joke of that gag is that you never see his nose. It's his deviated septum. Yeah. It's sort of a life
of
cocaine.
Just blood running down the front of the
That's based
fence.
On a guy from Detroit named Sniffer.
Uncle Sniffer.
Uncle Sniffer is a coke dealer.
Yeah.
No one's uncle, really. Ryan, your podcast with Justin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Why are they laughing?
I would actually recommend people listen to Ryan's podcast with Justin Roiland, the Rick and Morty creator, and sometimes.
Was that a laugh of recognition because of the podcast? God damn it.
Somebody clapped in the back or something.
Anybody? Do I know you? Are we friends? Oh, all right.
It's very addictive and very funny little personalities you guys have.
Yeah. Well, you said you're inspired by it, and that's why you did this podcast.
Yeah,
right?
I probably stole the idea. Yeah. But from you and seeing Proops at Sketchfest that first year we went, I think I was like, okay, let's just start podcasting. It was, whatever.
Had to throw Proops in too. You could have just gone with us.
You said no neurosis.
I know, Jeff. It's hard.
All right. So should we bring Real Abed up?
Yeah.
All right. Real Abed.
He's never been brought up before?
I don't think he's ever been up. No.
Oh, good Lord.
Real Abed.
Is this like it's nice to move
game.
Down?
Hello, Abed. The man who the character Abed on Community was based upon.
You were sitting here, right? Wait, you stand here for me.
Okay. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Great to be here. I didn't expect to come on stage, but that's fine. It's all right.
You shouldn't have sat in the exact center of the audience.
That was Callie's
my eyes.
Idea.
I mean, you almost sat like the...
I was like so worried. I was like trying to avoid your gaze, and I knew in a minute you looked at me, you would say something. So. Mm-hmm.
All right, so...
I feel like I should sit down.
No.
Stand.
Is that this table?
No.
It's not sturdy.
No, you can't. Stop that.
Okay. Sorry. I feel like I'm doing stand-up.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like this is a Freudian thing. Like, he developed this... Like you face away, that's the development of that couch. Like, you don't look at the audience and listen to us.
Okay.
We're going to counsel you.
So straight ahead, yeah.
So Abed, Abed's name is Abed. That's where I got the idea for the name Abed. He's also a bit of I would call you a pop cultural savant, kind of. But really, it's more music for you. I think actually
more like television.
Really,
I think more into television and film than music. Music was like something I dabbled in. Just like I was bored.
And he knows a ton about it, so that's just
dabbling.
I
learned everything and I moved on, kind of. It's like, yeah. I've heard enough music. You can only take so much music, you know.
All right, Abed, who wrote or who sings this song?
Uh-oh. I'm bad at this.
Dun, dun. Don't help him.
Woo!
Don't help him.
Yeah. I want to say this is... It feels like Led Zeppelin.
Nope.
Deep Purple.
Yeah. Adam Goldberg got it.
I see. I was close because of Almost Famous. Aren't they both in that movie?
Don't know.
Yeah. Close enough, I think.
All right. So by now you're saying Real Abed?
Well, that wasn't
fair. That was like so wild card.
Well, do you want to? That's my next question. Do you want? Do you want to think? How? To what extent do you want to think that the character on Community is like congruous with you? Like, what would make you more outraged, you know, or uncomfortable? The idea that he's nothing like you, or the idea that he's exactly like you, and therefore I have like somehow exploited you.
You know, everyone gets exploited, though. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, that's nothing new.
It's the American dream.
Yeah, I mean, it's been happening since... my people were exploited, basically.
By mine.
Yeah, by his. I didn't think we get along so well.
Ryan's half Jewish and Abed's half Palestinian. It's true.
This is how it goes with friends. But no, like, I don't... I honestly...
So half of you exploited half of him, but half of both of you just sit and eat Twinkies and don't care.
Yeah. Half of them is fine. The other half I got a problem with. Not really. But
I mean,
know,
so yeah, like I wrote the part, and I really wrote the part with you, the idea in my head that you would come in and audition for the part, which you did.
Which that was an amazing time of my life, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I grew from like you know a boy
so
to
so close.
Do you remember who else auditioned? Like who made it to the final round?
It was Kumail
Nanjiani.
We were both in the same room, and then also, which I knew him, which was crazy because I was like, I hope you get it, buddy.
And the guy from 30 Rock.
Yeah, and then Danny Pudi was there too. But I don't at the time didn't know he was Danny Pudi.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't Danny Pudi.
I shook his hand and he was Danny.
He was the guy from movietickets.com ad up until that point.
Yeah.
No, I remember something now when I was leaving. I remember leaving and I think it was when I was kind of doing good and I saw him coming out. It was Danny Pudi cuz I remembered his face and also you said he looked like a peanut. At one point. Sorry, but you did.
Yeah.
And then so I was coming out. And
I won't take it back.
I saw him on the phone. I don't know where this is going. I saw him on the phone, and he looked like so happy. Like he was ecstatic, and he was just full of life. And I was like, I wasn't that happy. I must have done that. And so I felt like, yeah, I mean, I guess he's going to get it. Like,
I mean, everybody kind of nailed it. After you walked out, everyone was like, holy shit, that guy is like that. I can see now where you got the idea for like the personality. Like some of the stuff on paper now makes sense. But they said the same thing after Kumail. They said the same thing after, what's his, I can't really remember his name. The guy that plays the assistant in 30 Rock,
like,
the actor.
Johnny Arbin or something.
Johnny Arbin, that's got to be it.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad now because like that guy's going to get mad, right?
I'm sure, yeah. He's a long-time listener, and tonight's the night finally we talked about him and we couldn't get his name.
Oh, no. He's going to beat me up after the show.
But Pudi was just the different... It was like all he came in and it was just like, okay, after he walked out, it was like, okay, so are we going to have a show with that guy in it or not? And so it had nothing to do with being right for the character. It was like now let's make the character right for that guy because he's like a superstar.
Well, that's
did these amazing things when he came in.
No, but see, I see that. I see that I inspired the character, but then you took it into a really cool direction, and it became its own thing. And so Danny brought a lot of himself to it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how it happened.
Guess what, Abed? They can't fire your creator.
Yeah,
that's
you're
right.
You're going to be the same Abed the rest of your life.
That's right. I'm in it for life, actually. Yeah. Yeah. I can't just jump out.
In a sense, half of your people are changing it to a different time slot.
We have some notes. Yeah.
You've tried to fire his creator.
Clearly.
Yeah, come
well,
on.
Well, all right. I don't want to go there. I mean, that's a whole other can. That's a whole other show.
Do you think Palestine should be a state, Abed?
Well, it is, Dan, actually.
I mean,
he calls it Israel. I call it Palestine, like apples and, potatoes and patatas kind of thing.
Right.
No, they're different.
Latkes clumps
and
of dirt. Yeah.
I don't even know
patatkes?
What they have. I don't know what the I'm trying
to
think.
You say latkes, I say patatkes.
they have some food that's like blah, 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 whatever. Uh-huh. I can't say it. I don't remember. Like I ate it. It was good. I don't remember what it was called.
It's not called patatkes.
You know? Yeah,
patatkes. If Dan had said that,
right.
He I ate some blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Abed, before you go, will you tell everybody your idea for a restaurant?
Oh, no. This again. How many times have we... Okay. Well... this is like I came up with this so long ago, and it was like I don't know why.
But it was a real idea for a restaurant.
Yeah, it was a real idea, and for some reason you attached to it so like tenaciously. Like
because
over
it's
the years.
Insane.
It's not insane though. It's totally it should happen basically.
Well, I'm sure they'll agree. Yeah. Just tell them.
Okay. Because you forget the specifics, like, when I tell you the story, like, every time.
You have... Now, we all realize that little foods are taking over, right? Foods are getting smaller.
I mean, that's yeah.
And, like, health...
We can all agree on this, right?
Yes, I mean...
We can all agree...
It's as simple as...
As a premise. Let's all agree as a premise... Before he goes any further, the little foods are taking over.
Just as the Wright brothers had to accept gravity.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't write the rules.
It's just fundamental.
Wake up, you guys.
Okay, fact number one.
Shake off the
little foods
of large
are taking
food
over.
For one time in your life.
I mean, okay, you're in a restaurant, you see a plate of little burgers and a plate of a normal burger. I think you'll go to the little burgers.
Fact number two.
You could have one little burger and be like, oh man, I got a taste and I don't feel guilty. It's great.
Right.
But the whole hamburger, if you eat like some of it and you just put it down, you're like, that guy's wasting food. Fuck him. You know, it's like you look, or you can't save it for later because it's weird. I don't know. So anyway.
I'm with you, baby.
Like, where can you go to get food that's all small? You know, there's no place.
You can go to the Smurfs Village.
That doesn't exist, though.
A tapas restaurant?
I think we've looked for that. What?
Tapas.
A tapas restaurant?
The Spanish have been doing this for centuries.
Oh, so they make small, like, burritos and tacos and stuff?
They make little...
No. I mean, like...
No. That's Mexico.
Describe the Spanish don't make burritos. Describe your restaurant, Abba.
So the restaurant's called Bites.
Bites.
And at the time, I thought it was clever to spell it with a Y.
Right.
Because
then everyone would think it was a computer store.
Yeah, the computer age was starting to, like, jump into the, you know, when I came up with the idea. Yeah. And then I was like, this idea, okay. You just go in, okay, let's say I'm with someone, like a girlfriend, if I had a girlfriend, and she's like, oh my God, I don't want pizza again, you asshole, I want burgers. And you're like, fuck you, I want burgers. You know, that happens all the time. At Bites, she can have her, you know.
What kind of relationship is this?
No, I'm just generalizing.
It sounds like a terrible relationship.
I'm saying, you're like thinking fuck you, but you're saying like, oh, I would like something else.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well,
that's your thinking.
It's like that Louis Armstrong song, right?
Talk to her nicely.
Oh, yeah.
Treat her like a lady.
Okay, well, fuck you, lady.
Okay, fuck you, lady.
But... No, I mean, okay. So that's the thing is like.
So you walk into Bites.
Yeah.
And the maitre d' is he sits you.
Well, he's small too, actually. The whole thing is gonna be like, yeah, I have it all.
Wait.
I mean, okay. See, you guys are all laughing.
You're just talking about a tiny little village.
You guys are laughing, but if he's a little person. And you order, it intensifies the experience because you're like, everything's small, it's so cool.
No. The waiter should be giant. They should be giant. They should cast high relief onto how small the bite of your food is.
Well, I don't know
if your waiter's tiny and he gives
you
a tiny piece of pizza, it looks like a real pizza.
But that's what's cool because in his world, it's like, oh, normal pizza, but then he gives it to you and you're like, whoa, small pizza from small guy.
Is he like a character when you come in? He says, hey, can I get you some normal sized food? And there's a sign that says, don't tell him.
No, you should be a co-partner. I mean,
I've invested in worse, I believe. Yeah.
No, right, really, so Abed,
I couldn't have thought of that.
Abed, what is on the menu at Bites?
What are the
appetizers?
Like a map of the world.
Well, the whole thing is appetizers, right? The entrees are appetizers.
Yeah, every kind of food there. Yeah, right. Well, yeah. I mean, so you come in and you're like, man, I just love kebabs. Oh, they're so good.
Right.
And like, you go to McDonald's and like, kebab what? What the fuck? Get out. But you go to Bites,
right?
And you just go to the section of the map where the Middle East is, and you got your kebabs right there, baby.
So what does a kebab at Bites look like?
Well, they're like little. It's just everything.
Like a toothpick with a cherry tomato on it.
It's like a tiny like gyro or kebab or whatever.
It's just miniaturized.
Yeah, so it looks like a little poop or something.
Did they come
like
from
a little poop?
Well, kebabs look like poop. Am I the only one
kebabs
that knows that?
Kebabs do not look like poop.
Yes, they do.
By applause, ladies.
Turd.
Not if you're doing it right. Not
Dude,
if you're doing
I see
it
a kebab
right.
And I go giant turd. It's not a food.
Okay,
and you want to say little turd?
Let's say I.
Well, yeah, little turd in here. That's the name of the special.
I walk into Bites with my girlfriend, whom I love.
Okay.
And I walk in there and I say, you know, honey, what are you in the mood for? She goes, I'm in the mood for soup.
Wow.
I would like a Vietnamese pho.
That's so fascinating because he had the same thing back in the day, but his question was like, what about if I want soda? Do I get a little drop of soda? Right. Or do I get, you know, like, what's the deal with that? And then I had to say, which I think I was like mentally like, fuck, what do I say? He's got me. I was like, all right, normal size soda. Because let's face it, no one's going to be like excited about a drop of soda. So I think with the soup...
I'm not excited about midget waiters.
Well...
Yeah, that's going to freak me out too.
What? Okay, well then you guys are
there was
cooks?
A guy.
Midgets.
There was a guy
I mean,
at the.
We're just trying to talk you through your business model here.
Can I tell you real quick?
Clearly, I'm not a businessman.
I just want to interject. When I was like 10 years old, for a time, my parents separated, and I lived with my mom in South Milwaukee, as we called it, South Milwaukee. And there was a McDonald's there that my grandma always recommended because it had Billy the Brownie. And I always I grew up thinking Billy the Brownie was a legitimate McDonaldland character. Little did I know I was going to a South Milwaukee McDonald's where some like homeless little person dressed up like an elf and just hung out at McDonald's. And would just talk to children and old people.
That was his name, Billy Brownie?
Yeah, Billy the Brownie.
Like a walk-on character?
And this was the...
That's like from Willow, remember the Brownie?
Oh, yeah.
This was the early 80s, and I had seen that Donald Sutherland movie, Don't Look Now. And a deafening silence from our 25-year-old peanut gallery. But let me tell you, that'll put the midget fear in you, that
movie.
Well,
look, I mean, I can't control your, whatever your psychosis is.
That's the one experience I have with being in a restaurant and having a little person be...
I thought you were attacking the restaurant with that psychosis story.
I think Jeff and I were both suggesting to you that with all due respect to all humanity, the idea of institutionalized, genetic, it's a eugenic kind of thing you're doing. Like, you're going, it's like a dachshund that you've bred to work at your restaurant.
You're opening a lot of doors for me here because now I'm thinking Oompa Loompa situation. I can get...
Right,
like,
just
you can
hire
find
a little
special it's kind like, of little person.
It's
that
like
only
Hooters
exists.
For little people.
They only exist in one land, and their skin is like blue, and they're like, or not blue. So
what about the animals? Are you gonna breed little animals too?
I just feel like Community would have been a better show with this Abed.
I do. Yeah,
it would have been a way different show. Yeah.
So Abed,
I would have drove him nuts.
Okay, so now I don't want to bend your mind. But take me into the kitchen at Bites because this is where my investment is hesitant.
Because
I feel like the overhead is maximized in a kitchen where, okay, so three tiny pizzas, one half anchovies, one half mushroom, and two tiny tacos, and one tiny chicken shish kebab.
The way to do it is you make a real pizza in the kitchen. Here's my pitch. You make a real pizza in the kitchen. And then you have a little
cookie
cutter that's shaped like teeth.
Oh, that's
like
a good
like
idea.
A little bite. And so it looks like somebody already bit out of the pizza.
Oh, that is awesome.
Oh.
Wow. No, I mean, I'm like,
it's
you guys
gross.
Are opening
it's
so
totally
many new
gross.
Doors here. Yeah.
So you have a bite of a burger that the teeth have already like incised the burger.
Oh.
And you have that on the
So
thing.
Then and then right. and then you put crumbs on the little person's cheek that meets you. Let me finish. And he's the spokesmodel for the restaurant, and his catchphrase is, "I'm full." you can finish it. And over five locations now on Hollywood and Layton. You can finish it.
There's our commercial, man.
Because Tiny Tommy.
Come see Tiny
Tommy. His stomach is extra small.
Well, but that's cool because it's like a Chuck E. Cheese thing. Everyone looks like the one thing, the one guy, you know? It's like if I had a ton of Chuck E. Cheeses at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
Like that. It's like they all kind of look the same, Oompa Loompas things. And yeah, and they're like, they take bites out of the food, but, you know, they don't actually do that. Yeah,
all right.
That's cool.
One more thing, and then we gotta keep the train moving.
You didn't finish the kitchen. I wanted to give you that kitchen update.
Well, I just think honestly, it's a non-solvent business because I don't think you've thought it through because the reason why Mexican restaurants don't bother to go, fuck it, you can also get a fish sandwich here and plus a pizza is because they would have to then like it wouldn't be worth it for them. You have to like kind of like focus your menu.
Well, it's Little Cheesecake Factory, basically.
Right.
Well, you know, I
mean, there's
like
50 things in that menu, right?
Compromise though, because what if now we make like a special food land So you enter Foodland, and there's like every restaurant in Foodland, kind of like the Disney of restaurants. Because my dream was like, I wanted people to have whatever they wanted in one place.
Yeah. Oh, right, right.
That was the dream.
As Goldberg says, it's called the food court. Right.
But food courts suck, and right. like they don't have any good food.
And it's too big.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck do I get? I'm confused.
I'm gonna eat a whole bowl of noodles?
Imagine entering.
What am I, a monster?
Imagine a glorious theme park where it's like you know what I mean? It's like you're visiting France.
Yeah.
But you're actually eating French. You know.
So you're talking about Epcot Center. You're talking about a miniaturized Legoland Epcot Center.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess I haven't been there, so that's probably what it's like. Yeah.
All right, you look a good Real Abbott. Let's have a hand for Real Abbott.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. You can.
Me too.
It's nice. I think. Yeah. I guess why don't you take a hike too, Ridley? Thank you for coming, Ryan Ridley. That's how you get Ryan Ridley to come to your show. You give him some stage time. It's nice. I think everyone should create TV shows with their friends in them, because then who was normally just normal Abed becomes Real Abed. And he was kind of an unreal guy before, and now whenever I see him, I go, hey, it's Real Abed, man. It's groovy.
I'm more real to you.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice. You're welcome, Abed, for the favor I did you. But
is there any part of you, Dan, that feels like... Like, what's your feeling about creating a character based on him? Like, which version of that is your favorite?
Well, I mean, what do you mean? Oh, which Abed do I like more? I mean,
yeah. Do you like your creation, or do you like the inspiration?
No, come on. Of course, I like Real Abed. He's real.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Me too. My favorite thing. We're at a party one time at Rob Schraub's place, and Abed was talking to a person that had passed out.
Oh, God damn it.
Rob, there was a person that had completely fallen asleep and was like, head back. And Abed, you were breaking it down.
I didn't know he fell asleep.
Exactly. Abed just called out, I didn't know he fell asleep. Exactly.
He was cutting the silhouette of a person sleeping.
He did look awake.
He only lacked the Z's coming out of his head.
The entire party started. So at a certain point, we went like, look what's happening over there. And Abed was just talking. There was just music playing, and he was talking to our friend Rod, who was full on asleep. And for real, like not only this won't translate to the podcast, but like seriously, not only talking to him, like so I guess you could see like you're talking, you're lost in thought, so you don't notice the other person listening. But like Abed was making these expressions. He was going like. Like he was somehow getting feedback from our unconscious friend, as Rod slowly slumped before he hit the floor like his head was like he looked like he was dead. His head was dangling, and Abed was just talking to him like he was on The View or something.
But the reason
talking about work, I worked with him. And it bored him. They were talking about work.
The beauty of that thing, what was great about that moment is not that that was funny and hilarious. I mean, it was, but like I like the sound of my own voice too. Like I would love the freedom just to talk to a corpse for a while,
or to not care that much. Yeah.
I repeat my story. So we tell the same stories in Harmontown a million times over. It'd be great just if you guys were all just mannequins. We could tell the big Jell-O story again. It'd be great.
It's like a superpower. Let's keep the people that auditioned for the part of Abed on Community Train rolling and bring up Kumail Nanjiani. It's a theme tonight.
I didn't know you auditioned for that.
Huh?
I didn't know you auditioned for that.
Yeah. I auditioned to be that guy.
How'd it go?
Well, I didn't get it, but I got pretty close.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. I was I would stay up at night going, "Fuck, did I fuck?" I mean, if it weren't for Danny Pudi and for Real Abed sitting in the audience right now, I would tell you, like, man, second place.
I'd never. Thank you. I had never acted at that point, by the way. That was my first. When I auditioned for that, I had no fucking idea what I was doing. And you were really nice. I'd met you before a little bit, and you came out to all of us, and you were like, you know, it's a really awkward, weird fucking process. Sorry, we have to go through it. You like apologize for the process, which
really?
Nobody does. Yeah.
Well, I'm very hard to work with.
Well, you gave me the wrong impression that day because I was like, oh, he's such an easygoing, nice guy.
It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah. I can't decide if Abed is Adam Goldberg light or if Adam Goldberg is Abed light.
I don't know. I there's a whole Rubik's Cube of humanity in our McDonald land. It's crazy.
I'm going to open your...
You notice that Adam Goldberg's been playing hard to get. Like, that's his new strategy.
No, he's not.
Well, he retired from being a character at the Egyptian show, and, like, he's playing it cool. He's reverse psychology. He's the gaming us.
Oh, yeah. Next time he wears, like, a huge hat to Peacock. Like, oh, ignore me.
I have noticed from Adam's behavior that he's obviously read weird, like, men's guides to dating. Because he does things like he'll give you a gift, but then 2 weeks later he'll go, can I have that back? And it's like, come on, that had to come from some creepy FHM like guide to getting her.
FHM.com/approximatehumanbehavior.
Like, yeah. So, but and now, yeah, and he's cold shouldering us. I mean, now he's in the second row.
He's the second row now. Yeah,
he's not. I shouldn't say cold shouldering us. He's not arms.
He's still piping up.
But look at him. He's got a healthy glow. He's smiling. He's having a good time. He's making us jealous. Like he's showing up at the ex girlfriend's party and being like, hey, what's up?
He just lifted up his sweater and showed us a Harmontown shirt underneath it. Though. Like, there's something terrible is about to happen.
You should listen to.
And underneath that shirt is clearly a bomb.
When you listen to his interview on the podcast cast, he gets deeply. Erin said she heard it and she was crying because it gets so personally revelatory. I listened to it and I was like, well, that's no. It's like Adam's like, you know, he's got a lot of my DNA. Maybe 50%.
Abed or Adam?
Adam.
Adam, right.
He was like, you know, he's got one foot in, one foot out. Like, when's he being self-deprecating? Is he a narcissist? Does he hate himself? Blah blah blah. He's kind of like he's telling the story of how. Adam's a dungeon master, like Adam's origin story. When you peel back the comic book character's layers, the night that Spencer came, that fateful night, and Spencer raised his hand when we said, "Is there a dungeon master here?" Adam's a dungeon master, and Adam wasn't here that night.
There's always a Spencer, yeah.
For real.
And he has had to live with the agony of some hypothetical alternate timeline where he is Spencer, ever since.
Which
includes him coming on tour with us, and you know
the poster has his face on it.
Yeah. Adam, you're a dungeon master.
Yep.
Well,
I have a story about it, but I'm playing hard to get, so I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not how you do it. You can't say. You can't reveal your strategy. That kills it. That should be rule number one. Don't tell anyone you read this article. Step two.
I mean. Because Kumail, you played hard to get for a year and a half. Like we had to ask you to come up on stage.
No, I didn't play hard to get. I came because my wife started off producing the show, and
it was her idea.
She said,
Dan Harmon, you should do a podcast.
Yeah,
it's not the light bulb. I mean, everyone had a podcast already. I was the last person to not have one. She was like, "Come on, I feel bad for you."
She did. Yeah, where is this going? So I used to come and watch with her, because, you know, I really liked watching the show, so I would come and hang out and watch the show for like a year, yeah.
But you had never played D&D before.
No.
But you're a gamer. You love games, right?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Pakistan. We didn't really have... D&D wasn't really a thing. Well, nobody I knew
ever
did.
Too close to home. because of an institution...
What do you think Pakistan is like? Dragons?
Well,
Dan Harmon?
I mean, you don't have first world problems, right?
By definition, we don't.
All I know is what I read in my Noam Chomsky books. I thought we had institutionalized a system of enforced, theocracy over there, like playing one against the other and kind of keeping everyone east of a certain line.
I guess Pakistan is closer to D&D land than Minnesota.
Yes. Less
if there's
mittens.
A spectrum.
Yeah, more caves.
We have.
I'm not saying there's ogres
you're
there.
You're on the line. Caves is right on the line. I feel like I really want to argue with you guys, but I can't really find an argument right now.
Well, it's an interesting. What is my obligation as a first worlder, privileged guy growing up in Wisconsin? Am I a better person if I acknowledge that the Middle East is a kind of artificially enforced kind of medieval territory?
Well, I will.
Or am I a better person if I go, they're people too? That's a great. Oh, that's the Fertile Crescent. What a wonderful place. The Paris of the planet.
I think there's a happy medium between those two. The happy medium being that it's not medieval, and also it's not the Paris of the planet. I think the happy medium would be, you know,
that you and I grew up in a culture where we have so much free time that we can pretend to live where life...
In a world where every corner you walk around, like a guy might chop you up with an axe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Again.
That's our fantasy.
I don't know how accurate that is per se. I mean, I do have axe wounds all over me. But if you're good at dodging, you can live to be, you know, the average age is 19. But that's
Listen,
including
man,
infant mortality.
We all saw Argo. We all know everything.
Dan, do you think Pakistan is more magical than Wisconsin?
It's more of all the territories over there. It's like one of the
territories. You mean countries? Of all the territories, tribes,
of all
you
the airstrips,
you mean my family?
Out of all the military bases that we have over there, it is one of the more westernized and like has had a tradition of like collaboration with.
It's sort of I would
the great white Satan
frenemy of America.
Yeah,
it really
a
is
frenemy.
Frenemies. Yeah. Like in
well,
that,
the, yeah, well,
it's
like,
very. It really is because a lot of the country obviously is against the West because it sort of stands for everything, the opposite of what sort of Islam stands for in a lot of ways. But then also there's a big seduction of the West, you know. So once we got MTV, like boys started wearing shorts. So it's sort of a weird tussle. It really is. It's you saw the country change once MTV happened.
I saw it. Yeah, it was all over MTV. Kurt Loder, you had the Pakistan transformation hour. When 9/11 happened, there was like I really honestly can't recall the details, but I remember Pakistan was sort of front and center in the headlines. I think it had something to do with.
I could see that
we needed. You know, there's always like some country like Libya or like something happens and America wants to maneuver something, and then there's like some like character that no one's thought about for 10 years. No one's used the word. And I remember when 9/11 happened, it was like Pakistan, 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 not for anything relating to anything other than like airspace or like something.
So it's sort of like when I watched I Know What You Did Last Summer, it kind of pissed me off that the murder was some fisherman that they wronged a year ago that you never saw. So to you, Pakistan is that fisherman.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I haven't heard.
You were
I
like,
heard
that
about
fucking
this guy.
Country? Why?
But there was some kind of thing. It was like yeah, Pakistan was
going to... That was a safe house. They were harboring, you know, Al Qaeda or something like that, right?
And or helping us, like it was like you know, caught in between, like was it Pakistan that had the no? That's Jordan. Jordan was what? Also like came to the forefront, and that's when
Jordan's gone. Pakistan, we're still hanging on to our 15 minutes.
Remember in the wake of 9/11, like this is like just speaks to like the first world kind of like I don't know. God damn it, what's the word?
Not ethnocentrism,
decadence.
Yeah, that'll do.
I remember sitting in a restaurant and like in the wake of 9/11 and everything. What are we going to do? And it's like a lot of Middle Eastern talk and a lot of officials coming forward, presidents, prime ministers. All of a sudden, people who haven't thought about the Middle East in 10 years are watching it on CNN and looking at like and the king of Jordan comes out and like he's got this wife and just like sitting there eating a cheeseburger, going like she's hot. Remember the kid, Queen of Jordan? It was like, oh, she's hot.
She was hot.
I don't know. I thought that was. I thought that would get a bigger laugh. Like, insane. Like this terrorist attack happened, and there's like all of this like shit bubbling up. But it was like I couldn't even. You just
well,
going, like,
what you do is you take something. It's human. You take something big and you try and like digest it in the way you can. So the
you're trying to turn it into an HBO miniseries.
Something that could make sense. Do you remember
to make it into Bites?
Do you remember when Saddam died? When they killed Saddam, right before that, they were like, oh, he really liked Doritos. Like, who? Why are you telling us that? You already killed him. If you want us to like him, don't. You'd be like, listen, turns out he likes Doritos, so we're going to stay of execution. He's not so different. They're like, we killed him, bad news. He liked Doritos, just like you do. Fuck.
While we're in this ticklish, sensitive, fun area, I remember you and I having a conversation because you're an actor, and you said you weren't back then. Like that was your first audition as an actor, but since then now you get a little acting career, and a little.
Yeah, no, I heard the first little. I like that it goes from the big, like making fun of my where I'm from and my tribes, to now also the personal.
Yeah, now we're gonna go.
It's very thorough.
I've seen your bed where you sleep. It's weird. It's a
straw.
Yeah.
It reminds me of home, Dan.
I remember we had a conversation about like the weird, like what, like how, like okay, a white actor in America gets an audition. Hey, they need a guy to play the male lead's best friend. He kind of wants to fuck his girlfriend, but he's half gay and he loves basketball. So you come in, and you go like the biggest struggle a American white actor has is you go like, oh, this guy's kind of fratty. So I'm gonna put my spin on it, but whatever, it's not written for me. But then there's this whole other component happens if you're Asian, if you're Latin, if you're Middle Eastern, if you're whatever the other things are,
Mordor.
Yeah, if you're an elf, if you're a dwarf, if you're I remember having a conversation that was kind of provocative and interesting. Like when we were talking about like you being like through no choice of your own, you're at the forefront of that because you have to ask yourself as a person, obviously with like a 350 IQ, comes from like. Actually, not
the metric system, though. It's actually,
not only ethnically, having this cross to bear, but actually, like you moved here and are acting over here, and now you get auditions. So you go in, and it's like you know, you imagine the kinds of things like we all know. Like it's like oh, this guy's a quirky guy. And like
yeah.
We had a conversation about it, but I was drunk, so like I don't remember it. But I remember it being fascinating. Maybe we could dig it up. And I'm like Dr. Frankenstein, I'm just sewing parts together.
I feel okay. So for a long time, first of all, when I first started auditioning, I was auditioning for a lot of parts. Clearly, that Aziz had gotten too big for. They were clearly written in his voice, and I read like three cab drivers named Aziz. I fucking swear that happened.
It's a fun name. I was like, Aziz.
Yeah, yeah. You imagine him swinging tree to tree, Dan. Sorry, cave to cave.
Thank you.
No, well, I think what it was, yeah, so I do a lot of auditions now where it's still, it's getting better, but a lot of people will sort of basically tell me to up my accent
right.
without saying it.
Right.
So I'll like do the audition. They're like, oh, that was great. Could you do it a little like even more? Like even more exaggerated? I'm like, first of all, I'm not doing anything. This is how I talk. And I made a decision like 2 years ago where I was like, I'm not going to change my accent for any of these auditions. So I've had a lot of auditions go well, and they're like, all right, now try it this way. And right. I get sort of upset, and it's kind of obvious. And so I haven't. But then I see fucking, there's so many people. I don't want to name names, but there's people that you know who are brown actors who I'll audition with, and I can fucking hear them in there like pissing on their legacy, like all doing all that shit. It fucking pisses me off so much.
We're talking about Danny Pudi, right?
Fucking Danny Pudi. But it always gets me. That really angers me. It's like sort of like they're like scabs, you know? Like, come on, we're all in this together. Right. Don't fuck it. And then they get the part.
Right.
Wow.
I remember my ex-girlfriend Erin Hill. When I was dating her, she was a media studies getting her master's degree, going for a PhD, and she would spend all this time going through these archives, and she uncovered this thing from the probably the 40s or 50s. This Native American actor who his headshot was like,
oh god,
it was signed, and he was like, he had a bowler hat with a feather in it, and
one tear running down his face.
Yeah, well, that was the '70s. That was when we actually started to go like hey, these guys have clout. They're, now that they're all dead, like what if you made them cry? Back then it was still like hey, they're funny. Their houses are pointy. His headshot was like signed like me wantum commission for agentum.
Oh god.
Much good wampum for, you know, like yeah. Obviously you could tell the guy was like a good guy.
Yeah, he's like, how do I get the part?
Yeah. and it's like hero or villain or the whole Hollywood shuffle thing, the but it's the interesting thing about it is the lack of like easy empirical truth. Because if I'm an African American actor and I why don't I, for instance, have the right, the same right that a Caucasian actor would have to affect a Brooklyn accent or take advantage of the fact that I'm from Jersey or that I know what a Southern person sounds like in order to try to get some part,
sure,
according to Francis or whatever they're doing. If you're a black person and you're going in as an actor and it's like, well, this guy's he's a little groovier, he's a little blacker than you're doing it, and that's not how you talk, but you're an actor. That's the it's a terrible thing to put someone in the position of. Your craft is supposed to be pretending. You're supposed to be able to pin medals to your chest to the extent that you're able to portray different aspects of yourself and other people, imaginary people. We give awards to people who do it who remove us from reality more. And so now, even though you didn't buy a ticket to that ride, here you are as an actor, when all the other actors get to just go, I either get the part or I don't, you have to tweak it in your head and go, well, I either get the part or I don't, and there's way less parts, and on top of that, I have to fucking act like the
one Indian guy, the one like brown guy that people are comfortable. Although the couple things, one, it's I feel it changing. Like, I've been getting parts that were written for white guys and stuff, so it's changing.
Right.
And I do think, honestly, that the character of Abed on Community did sort of change things, because it was a kind of brown guy that we hadn't seen on TV before.
Right.
And so when I read that, I was like, oh, when I watched the show, I was like, oh, this is great. This is, you know, a new kind of brown guy. This is going to change. And then I read like the next pilot season. I read like five scripts that had like,
there's still
basically Abed with different names.
A friend of mine that I won't name because I don't want to get him in trouble read a pilot I don't even want to describe it because I don't want anyone to get in trouble. But like, there's a, according to this friend of mine, there's literally a point in the script where the other characters are introduced in this kind of wacky ensemble, and literally the names of the characters are Asian lady and fat guy, and like they didn't even, it's like, whoa, got home by three today, huh?
Oh.
Like, crazy. So, and I really think that if you're, you know, since the Harmontown audience, I assume, is 90% writers and 85% 25-year-old writers, like I think that the way to break the cycle starts at what I used to call the typewriter. Like I think the key to it is like, you have to avoid the temptation. With the Abed character in Community, that was the one exception in that script where you actually bothered to explicitly say he says he's half Palestinian or something like that.
Yeah.
Like it was in part, real Abed is half Palestinian. It felt important to the character to me for some reason. Maybe I was right. Maybe I was wrong.
It makes sense because he's a guy who's half. So he's sort of obsessed with pop culture, but then there's also this other part of him that sort of, it sort of makes him an observer, even though it's not specifically a racial thing. But somebody who's sort of straddling two cultures like that.
Maybe
sort of,
I mean, in retrospect, and it's also.
But not, I mean, he could have been a white guy and it wouldn't have been. There was one storyline with his dad that was a little specific to his ethnicity.
In retrospect, he definitely could have been a white guy, and he surely could have been half Indian, half Polish, which Daddy Pooty is. But at the time, there was this whole, not the whole brouhaha, but it's just like, I monitor Twitter and it's like, there's all kinds of different viewpoints that come in, and some, you know, justifiably some come in and go, why do you have an Indian guy playing, a half Indian guy playing a half Arabic guy? Like, what are you doing? So all brown people, blah, blah, blah. Very justifiable, absolutely. But it didn't shake down that way. You create a character. You say, okay, this is based on my friend, real Abed, whose dad was Palestinian, whose mom was whatever, Nordic or something, and who had this very specific backstory to him. You know, his dad was like it had really a lot to do with the relationship with his dad, which we did explore. It was like his dad was not a fundamentalist Muslim, but a passionate one, a stern guy, a kind of great Santini type in my head. And that would be because father and son stories are very important to male characters, that was important. And it was like, race isn't important. That's an artificial construct, but nationality of your parents could be called an important thing. So then Danny Pudi walks in, fucking blows the roof off the room. Okay, like
can we stop talking about how good he was in the audition? We get it. He got the part, Dan. You know what? I was really upset when I didn't get it, but when I saw the show, I was like, oh, the right guy got it. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I think that's the great thing about casting. Yeah, it's like no one's gonna feel bad about this. Like, let's all watch the fireworks. But so later on, it's like the tweets coming in, it really vexed me because I'm like, I've got all this white guilt, and like I want to be Norman Lear. I don't want to be a bad person. I want to use my talent right. I want to contribute. I want to make people happy. And people are going like, what? Why is this brown guy playing a different kind of brown guy? So torn between like this is a slippery slope where you go like, oh.
By the way, that's not an issue to me or any. I mean, that's they're really.
I think
really...
it's a justifiable issue to some people, but it all depends on where you. It all depends on the context. Like if you, it really is. It's such a strange time to be alive, and I think that there is no magic wand to wave over it, no rule. But I definitely think it starts with people writing scripts where you gotta detach yourself from like it's like you just go like, oh, this character is amazing. He's this big fat black guy, and he talks like a little girl. Isn't that a great character? No, it's not. Like, that's a great actor if that guy comes in and plays the character of...
Well, how important would it be to you if you change the gender of people? Like
well, that's where, yeah, where do you stop? And it's like do we progress to a weird Gene Roddenberry age where screenplays are like ones and zeros and you're kind of like, the rook has a problem with the pawn, you know? And that's it. I don't know. And does that mitigate creativity? Does that mitigate passion? Obviously, the answer is yes, because to the extent that you do that, then some punk rock writer is going to go, two black dudes walk in. This fucking script rules. Whatever. So we don't have to keep talking about that. It's because there is no finish line for that. I think the discourse is the valuable thing. I think that people talking about it is the only place that it's valuable.
I think as long as you're aware of that, you know, I think a lot of times, a lot of scripts I read, it's just funny. I can read it. I'm like, oh, the line isn't funny. It's funny because whoever wrote it in his head heard it in an Apu accent or whatever. That happens a lot. I've gone into, I don't want to, this is too specific.
We won't tell anybody.
All right, okay, so... this is very specific. Can I sort of tell you later to take it out if I decide? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, I had this one.
You raped a baby.
I did this one movie. What'd you say?
You raped a baby. TLDR, semicolon, whatever.
Yeah. I wanted to rape a black baby, but then, you know, I was like, race doesn't matter.
Gross.
So it was like Hispanic or whatever. Some kind
Snickers.
Of...
Snickers. It's a sad spot. I'm sorry, we can't edit it out. That's where we did our Snickers spot.
They pay us a lot of money.
Sure design t-shirts. So soft.
This segment brought to you by Nabisco.
I had this movie that I didn't audition for. They'd seen my stuff. They liked it, and it wasn't a huge part. So I went in, and the first day of shooting, they were like, so how thick are you going to do your accent? And I was like... well, I'm not going to do it thick at all. And they were like, what do you mean? It's supposed to be a thick Indian accent. I was like, well, I sort of have the 10-year out of Pakistan accent, and that's what it's going to be. So it became this huge thing. Producers were calling and stuff, and I called my agent, and I was like, I think they're going to fire me off this movie. And I was like, I know I can make this part funny being myself with the lines, but I don't know if I can make it funny if you want me to do like a crazy accent. And then I was like, just let me do one the way I talk and then we can talk after that. And it worked, and it worked great. And they were like, all right, just do what you're doing. So I think a lot of people are just scared of writing parts or imagining parts that don't fit into whatever, you know, their little boxes or whatever. It's hard to see. As we get, you know, in the beginning, like there was a... Now there are a lot of black characters on TV, and they're all sort of varied and different. And I'm sure there's still strides to be made. But there was an actor, Emily was telling me about this. There was an actor in, when was it, Emily? His name was Sleep and Eat, is what he went by. And his whole mythology.
Sleep Aid?
Sleep and Eat. Like sleep and eat. He was an actor, and his whole thing was just give me a place to sleep and something to eat, and I'll work for you. Like he totally played up that whole.
So he could step or fetch it.
Yeah, it really was like that. It was like that. And wow. So, and that wasn't.
He wanted wampum for his.
Yeah, that wasn't that long ago, you know, and it's changed. So.
Yeah, so on one side of it, yeah, you got writers. Writers have got to do everything they can to go, like, okay, I'm going to create a character that's based on an emotional component. And if there's biographical components, then that comes out of the wash. And then on the actor's side, it's like, I think if you're the Meryl Streep of Pakistani actors, then you could maybe fuck around with it. If they go like, could you lay the accent on a little more thick? You go like, okay, I'm going to do that in a based on my decades of studying all of these different kinds of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for me, it was, I decided not to do it because it was hard for me to parse which parts were the guy had a thick accent and it made sense in the story, made sense for the character, and which parts were, because I was going mostly for comedies, which parts were thick accent just because the guy thought it would be funnier for a thick accent Indian guy to say a motherfucker or whatever, yeah, yeah, you know?
Yeah. So, or talk about Star Wars, which was like a big thing before.
Oh, yeah.
That was why Abed was like an important thing to me, was because it was like, I want him to be the foremost expert. Yes, he's going to be talking about pop culture. It's not funny because he doesn't have an accent.
He has an accent. It's like, the American
accent.
Let
me ask you a question. When Batman fights Bob the Goon in issue number 3, it's like, it's funny. Oh, because listen to how he talks. He's not supposed to know about Star Wars. And that's like, that to me is like kind of like a black guy in a dress. It's like all a part of the same like tree. It's like okay, there's nothing. The character's not real. The character's
But then also when you think of something like nerd, the way that nerds are written a lot of times are also in a box. So, you know, Star Wars is a good example. I read so many scripts where someone's a nerd. If they talk about Star Wars, that's like, oh, they're a nerd. And I would always, if I'm working on something and there's a Star Wars reference, I'm like, that feels so generic. That feels like you're just saying sci-fi.
Right.
Make it more specific. Make it, you know, Lord of the Rings or something. So for everything you do, there's these sort of pointers, like little ways that you put people in boxes.
Yeah.
I can't believe you guys are here still.
be a better writer and be a better actor, and we'll all meet somewhere in between.
Well,
all right.
Speaking of characters and the unknown,
let's pull my pants down.
Dan, whip that dick out on these people.
I want to show you these two characters, Clifford and Northumberland.
Let's bring Spencer.
They're classics. They're classics.
Spencer, when you come to the stage.
Spencer Crittenden is in.
Spencer Crittenden, judgment master extraordinaire.
Hey, I have something to ask Kumail while Spencer sets up.
Yeah.
We don't do anything like very. We're not a big planny podcast. Like, and I as a person, I don't make a lot of plans and contact a lot of people. But this is your third time up here, and are you bummed out that you have to keep coming up, or are you?
No, I love being on stage with you guys. It's always super fun.
Okay, because your really character could like fall off a cliff, or also like you don't have to like there's no pressure. Like, you know,
no,
I would actually prefer if your character had maybe a little bit more.
You can give us
more.
What's
the word I'm looking for, Dan? I don't know.
Spice.
A little more.
You know what's funny?
Could you cave it up a little more?
Cave it up.
What's ABC funny is
Geico, cave it up.
For black actors, there is a phrase they always say: "Be more street." That's what they say, or
right.
More urban.
Urban. Yeah.
For my people, there isn't
give us
that
more
word
attitude,
yet.
Attitude. Like
yeah,
black
attitude.
People hear a lot.
For us,
auditions.
there isn't like a set number of like adjectives that you can use
what,
to really.
What? There must be some. There's certainly in casting offices.
They'll say even
like,
more. Some people are stereotypical. Obviously,
ooh,
they
yeah.
say, "Yeah, that one's harsh." One woman was like, "All right, that's good, but be even more funny." But the way she said it was like, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
be,
like you people.
Could you be
they
less,
want me to do.
Could you be less 6'10 and more, I don't know, 7'11?
Yeah. You're at an 8, need you at a 7'11.
What I'm getting right now is like a B plus poo.
Yeah.
I want like a.
They really want you
like
to do.
Apu.
They really want you to do the Apu accent, which is voiced by a white guy.
Hilarious.
Right. Their idea of an Indian accent is literally a white guy.
Oh.
Anyway, but you know what? It is getting better.
What did you think about? God damn it! What's his name? He's an awesome actor, Monk.
Tony Shalhoub.
What did you see? Quick Change with Bill Murray.
I don't remember. I saw it when I was a little kid.
He plays a cab driver in it. Bad first impression. Like, and he plays a cab driver who is very. He doesn't speak English. And he's like, it's this farce. Like Bill Murray's trying to get out of town. He robbed a bank, and now he just can't get out of New York. And one of the complications is like Jason Robards plays this detective who's one step behind Bill Murray, and he's trying to pick up his trail. Tony Shalhoub played this like on paper, like he's a Middle Eastern cab driver. He's one of the many things about New York that prevents you from getting out after a bank robbery, and so he's. He's witness to the fact that Randy Quaid like fell out of the cab, blah 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 blah. So Jason Robards is interrogating him, like, where did they go? Where did they go? And he's doing like this mime shtick, like on paper, like it couldn't be more like he's going bluff Tony. Bluff Tony, and he's like miming, honking a horn. He's trying to tell them through his, you know.
How is he a cab driver if he can't understand English?
I
remember the first time realizing, like, watching Short Circuit, Fisher Stevens, and being like, "That's not."
Yeah,
I know what we look like, and it's not that.
I just always like if you watch it, go rent Quick Change. It's a really like a, I don't know, it's amazing little like 3 a.m. movie. Snuggle up with your girlfriend or boyfriend, open minded night, or your dog, but not if whatever. It doesn't.
Don't fuck your dog. That's what we're saying.
And also, I'm not equating bestiality with homosexuality or with heterosexuality.
No. Those are three distinct types of people.
Cuddle up with whatever you want to cuddle up with,
or don't cuddle.
Upside down like a bat.
Don't cuddle. Yeah. The point is not what you're doing. The point is the movie.
There's no wrong way to watch Quick Change, is what you're saying.
I don't know. I think fucking your dog and watching it might be.
I think that's bigoted of you to say that. I say.
Yeah. What if the dog's into it?
There are people.
Why is that a crime?
We have a lot of people that are going to hear this podcast, and some of them may want to rape an animal while they watch Quick Change. I say good for you.
Well, no, rape, but
rape
consensual.
That dog and what? The important thing is that you watch Quick Change. The animals aren't important here.
Different people have different priorities.
Write a stereotypical Middle Eastern character while watching Quick Change. Just watch Quick Change.
Yeah. Tony Shalhoub walks into this character that is written as a sand trap of stereotypicality.
It's
no pun in.
Wow.
I love that play of words.
All right.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, the reason I said that is because I didn't see it as a thing because I don't think
really?
That way.
Golf so much.
Parts of you saw it.
You're a big golfer.
Dan, this is the first golf analogy you've used in the entire run of the show.
Well, if racism is that unconscious, then hey. Hey. Yeah.
He's trying to curry favor with the police.
Tony Shalhoub, who is like I
save it, Dan. You can salvage this.
Go watch it. It's the scene. Jason Robards is talking to this guy, this character that may as well be Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh dear.
But Tony Shalhoub. Like who didn't say no to that audition? I'm not at all like flying in the face of anything that we've said. And it was but it's an interesting thing to look at because Tony Shalhoub, he made some decision walking onto the set that look, I'm an actor, and I'm going to make people feel this character's pain and frustration. I'm not going to make them hear his funny accent and hear like only thing I can remember from that scene is like Jesus Christ, this guy is so scared and he's alone and he doesn't know what's happening. It brings you to the brink of tears. It's just supposed to be this stupid gag about this guy that talks funny. But I'm telling you, like, take a look at it. Tell me if I'm wrong. Email me, whatever. You know my email address.
Next time in town, we just screened Quick Change.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you, we'll get Tony Shalhoub for that one.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. Another thing I remember the first time being like watching this, and as a kid, and being like, "That's not right." Was I think it was Bad Boys, where there's a part where they're talking to like a clerk at basically a 7-Eleven, whatever. Do you remember that scene? And the guy calls him a mother bitch, and I was like, "Oh, we know everybody. If you know enough to know that bitch is a swear word and that mother something is a swear word, you know it's motherfucker. Mother bitch, nobody's ever said that."
It's funny. It's funny. You guys are like Mad Libs. You don't know what you're doing. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, you pussy.
Oh, my goodness, chicken. I burned. Oh, your motherless dog. I put a goat in your foot.
You chode punter.
Spencer, keep it the fuck down, would you? Enough.
All right, we need
enough.
We need a stool and a mic for Sedona Mulray.
Aaron McGathy to the stage, would you? Spencer, get us up to date in our campaign, would you please?
Yeah, did anything happen?
Wait, can you guys?
Huh?
Did anything happen last time?
You know, I have a
vague memory. I don't.
I was in bed knitting Jeff a scarf. Did anything happen?
Oh, yeah. I fucked your horse. But also, I fucked Dan's bird and I fucked a squirrel. I fucked a lot of things. Like,
you fucked a half a dead zombie?
I was...
I don't know if you fucked it in the appropriate part or if you just fucked the where it got sliced. It was unclear.
Adam Goldberg was texting me last week during the show, live texting, Jeff just fucked your horse. And then Dustin Marshall was
not a real horse, you know. Spencer, take it away.
The horse is as real as the fucking it got. I mean, relatively speaking.
When we last met, our heroes had been following Christaberg the Bard to the fabled ruins of Mershul, home of the Soul of Growth. After traveling for a time, day shifted to night, and before long, the sound of unsettling moans and wails echoed throughout the forest. Less than cognizant of the impending threat, our heroes took a rest break, discussing music, studying ancient tomes, and fucking wildlife, until a grip of zombies were all but upon them. Mulrain, who in a fey mood bargained with the party over her use of the entangle spell, eventually decided to use it and captured several zombies. After making several concessions, the party waited for the forest to do its bidding. After entangling their foes, the barbarian, with the help of the new blood spell cast by Sharpie, made quick work of the remaining zombie stranglers. This is all going to shit. The party pressed on before arriving at an ancient crumbling ruin deep within the forests of Twyla. So, if you can see, I'm not even on the music. I'm so sorry, everybody.
You got 26 seconds.
How are you feeling? Just say how you're feeling.
Walking through the ruins, you notice several stone statues before you, lurking and guarding the ruins within.
Spencer, everybody.
Thanks, audience. Right.
Okay, so it's Quark, Sharpie, Mulrain, and Krista Berg.
He wrote and performed
The Lady in Red.
Yeah, huge hit.
Yeah. Career's kind of fallen on, you know, maybe a bit of a lull.
I would say so.
You certainly didn't expect that you'd find yourself here.
No. I thought once I had Lady in Red, I was like, oh, the world is my... Like, I looked in the mirror and I was like, this shit's too easy. Right.
Sergeant Pepper, next.
Now here you are. You're standing outside of a stone ruin. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, I've heard horses being fucked. Yeah, shit's gone off track.
All right, so I examine surrounding Spencer.
The masonry appears ancient, part of some long past ruined civilization. Most prominent are worn and crumbling statues stood on stone pedestals bearing the likeness of humanoids with bestial heads. They appear to be dragon heads. The statues flank a well-worn stone floor that leads about 60 feet down to a thick stand of tightly knit trees. Between the trees is a small crevice in the dead center of the clump of trees.
Sorry.
No, I was just saying go. Sorry.
Oh,
sorry,
it's
everybody.
Okay. It's okay, Spencer. Are we cool?
My self-esteem is just
What's going on, Spencer? You seem a little down.
Spencer, you're a true dungeon master.
What's going on, Spencer?
You're the best. What are you talking
Thanks,
about?
Guys.
People Spencer, come for you.
I couldn't tell you.
What's going
great,
on?
I had a great day with Nolan. You know, I had
Christopher?
I wish.
Yeah, what a name drop that would be.
I mean, he's just out there fucking
well, Nolan.
No, sitting on top of the Hollywood yeah. sign.
We're in talks for a fourth Batman.
What if this H was in another H? Oh, Christopher, you're amazing.
Yeah. What was the question?
Who is Nolan?
What, huh? He's there.
Oh.
Spencer, you don't seem yourself tonight. What's going on?
Yeah, no. We ate at Pink's Hot Dogs.
Ah.
Okay.
Did you get the ennui dog?
I couldn't even tell you what I got. It was like I thought I was going to get something, and then I saw these little squares that said try these other things, and I tried one of the other things.
You mean menus?
Spencer.
No, menus are lists. These
was
are
the problem,
squares.
Was the problem that the hot dog was too big?
you might have just wanted a bite of the hot dog.
I'm still. What?
Are you saying that your stomach is in a little turmoil right now?
No, not
are you. Are you shitting
well,
like a goose right now? Is that
already.
Going on?
I'm past that phase.
Right.
That's done.
Spencer, did you have a good time at Dan and my Oscar party last
Oh, yeah. You know how to throw a party, Aaron.
Well noted. I guess I'm He's always looking for validation after party.
Spencer, that was a good line reading. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
This time, could you be a little more...
He's been to the same websites that Adam Goldberg's going to.
I was in fishing.
I really enjoyed the peanut butter cake. It was good.
Yeah, I made peanut butter cake. You know, you can make peanut butter cake.
Yeah, they don't have to be separate things that make you equally happy. Like, you can actually have peanut butter and cake at the same time.
It was our cheat day, and I was like, Dan, what do you want? And he was like, peanut butter cake. I was like, that's not real. And then I Googled it. It was very real.
And I do admit I made it up, but I knew if you Googled it, I know there's got to be a thing. Cause
next week it's going to be blowjob lollipop or something.
Well, I mean...
That's already a real thing.
Every lollipop's a
40 years
lollipop.
Of chronic masturbation, if you Google it, it is there. Like, yeah. I knew peanut butter cake would be there if fucking like cake farts is
Go
there.
Go the distance.
Oh, man. I find my horse Coco sitting at the bottom of a shower.
Wait, my memory's a little foggy, but I'm pretty sure at some point it became consensual with Coco, right?
It became consensual.
I don't think
it's the raciest thing anyone has ever said.
No,
it became. She stopped resisting.
I never.
It became consensual.
I did not.
She stopped crying.
I did not rape Coco. I fucked Coco, and Coco dug it.
Did she? Okay.
Spencer, what was Coco's stance on this? If I recall, Coco, her whinnies. Her name means yay.
She. That is the best horse rape joke I've ever heard.
Oh my god.
Oh
my god. Show's over. What best horse rape joke ever?
Yeah.
Name means yay.
Name means yay. That's pretty good.
Meanwhile, statistically, 11 people in this room have been raped.
By Jeff.
By me last week, and they fucking loved it.
Halfway through, they started liking it.
But Spencer, the horse. This is important. Was it consensual? This is very.
The horse did orgasm.
Can we call the episode "Name Means Yay"? Can we make that the name of the episode?
I'm in favor of that. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't,
are
I
you
don't,
rolling a dice to see
I
if it was...
I randomly determined that it was consensual.
It was consensual, he says.
It was consensual?
Yeah. See, 1 through 3 would have been non-consensual. I rolled a 4 through 6.
So it was barely...
Yeah, barely consensual. Yeah.
It wasn't critical consensuality. She's had better.
I'm a gnome. It's not the size of the barbarian.
It's the motion of the sword.
It's the motion of the potion.
She thought the wind was blowing strong. Okay, well, no, that's good news. That's good news.
Yeah, no, Coco had a great time.
Fine.
Jesus, apparently.
Well, fantastic.
Huh? Yeah. I don't remember.
You don't remember. Oh, right.
Okay, so I led them here, right?
Yeah. You were leading them here. Zombies happened. You took care of those. Then you came upon this room.
I hit a zombie.
Yeah.
It was my first hit in many years.
Hey, nice, Chris. Chris, let it go, man. It's like you're hung up on
Chris,
this.
As you're traveling on this journey, do you have a soundtrack running in your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's happening right now?
It's Lady in Red.
All right, we're looking down a flight of stairs.
What? Right?
It's down a flight of stairs. Like I'm not a visual thinker.
Okay, there's four statues, two on either side of this path. The path goes to like what seems to be an unusually thick clump of trees. And in this thick clump of trees, you can see like maybe a man-sized hole like in the trees.
Okay, which man?
Many different sizes.
Man.
Never mind. Sorry.
Standard man. So that's in there is where the soul of growth is.
Yeah, you know that for sure, Christenberg?
Yeah. I led you guys here. I haven't led you astray yet. It's in there.
All right.
Christenberg, why do you keep on signing all these trees and you're putting your autograph on everything? Dumb. I'm sorry.
Because I'm practicing for my, inevitable second hit.
That was a bad setup. I'm sorry.
Quark. Will you Willem Dafoe into this hole and kind of like platoon style?
Okay, so I do my best Willem Dafoe impression from Platoon, and I go, "See you in a week," and that's from Platoon, and I turn a little one of those Vietnam bendy flashlights that have a little red light, and I jump down the hole.
Well, do you want to?
Can I look for Vietnam bendy flashlight on Amazon?
I've got one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to light an actual torch?
Yes.
Okay.
I light an actual torch.
Yeah.
Slipping through the hollow, you fall about 20 feet.
Oh.
Landing in about 3 feet of thick, foul mud. Below the mud is hard stone, and you can't see in the pitch black conditions.
Where's my torch?
It just plunged into this thick mud and went out.
What? I walk over, light a torch, and I want to throw it to him.
That happens. Okay. You see a torch falling from above.
Hey, torch!
Got it!
All right.
You grab the torch and hold it aloft.
Thanks, Christenberg.
Yep.
The room is pretty narrow, but you can make out what seems to be a square in the far wall.
Try not to fuck it.
You know, square peg, round hole, that kind of thing.
I should mention,
I'm all fucked out from last week.
You also see several perfectly spherical, fist-sized holes perforating the wall.
I fuck one of those holes.
The first one feels good.
No, it's
the second one feels
slightly bitey. Yes.
It's too loose, man. You're not that big.
You can fist
it. I said
it.
Fist-sized holes,
okay,
man.
Okay, I put my fist in the... I fist the hole?
I'm not suggesting
what
that.
What am I, gross?
What is happening?
I see a hole shaped like a fist. I put my fist in the hole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your fist's in a hole, dude.
I rotate it 30 degrees to the right... Then 40 degrees to the left. I don't know.
I hear the far off sound. No, nothing happens.
Okay, I take my fist out of the hole.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey guys, come on down. There's a bunch of fist holes down here.
I think you might have rope. Yeah, I mean.
I have a rope, guys.
Yeah.
We can use it to climb down.
Yeah. You want to climb down?
Okay. Yeah.
Climb down the rope.
Climbing into the darkness below. You meet with Quark in the mud.
I use my staff with the button on it.
Using that staff with a button on it, you climb into the hole where the people are.
Hey, guys.
Did you use the staff with the button on it?
Yeah. I press the button, unstick it, you know.
That's the trick.
I take one of my sacks, and I throw it at the bottom of the hole, and then I jump on the sack. Like a landing pad.
Okay.
Oh, is the dirt an issue here? I had rope. You could climb down.
Oh, okay.
And I a pole.
I realized I could use Can I use Chris's rope?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. What
the
a
rope.
Gentleman.
The rope's for everyone.
Yeah. That is
also,
so great. I mean, I didn't
there's,
want to
there's 3 feet of mud down here. I landed pretty softly. You can kind of just hop on in here.
But, I mean, I have rope.
I will happily use your rope.
Guys.
I examined the square at the end of the thing.
It appears to be some sort of wooden board. It's caked with mud and is stuck fast to the wall.
I detect magic on it.
It is not magic.
Oh. This isn't magic. does anybody have any thiefy, like, detect traps?
I'm a total
traps,
thief.
Detect traps?
Should I do detect traps?
I mean, you can look for traps, totally.
All right. I look for traps. Totally.
Looking for traps. You fail to find anything. Those holes are kind of suspicious, but you don't think they're traps.
How many holes are there?
There's several. I mean, there's... If you counted them, you'd think it would be a waste of time.
I count the holes.
Never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight.
There are 76 holes.
Guys.
76 fist holes led the big...
I think a bunch of people just came down here. I think the first guy saw the wooden board, detected traps and magic on it, and nothing happened. And he was like, fuck, what do I do? And he punched. And then whatever happened to him happened. And then the next guy came down and said, why is there a fist-sized hole? It's got to be significant. And then he punched like a bunch.
Uh-huh.
And then that kept happening.
76 guys.
Yeah. So I kick the wooden square.
I kick it. What's your strength?
2 million. Nine.
I disagree.
It says minus one ability modifier.
Yeah, nine is a negative modifier. Kicking the board. You feel it give a little bit, but it doesn't budge.
I kick it too.
What's your strength?
It's like, I'm 18 with a plus four ability modifier.
You kick it too. It bends it a bit better, but not much.
Shit.
Can I call down Coco? She is a horse.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Can I fortify the wood?
What are you going
to
fortify?
No, we're trying to break it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
I don't think Coco can fit down here.
Really, she can't get it because she kicked so hard. Okay.
Yeah, tell me about it.
It's fine. She liked it. It's fine.
She was trying to kick you off. That's nothing to be proud of.
No, look, man.
No, I like being liberated and empowered. It's fine.
I have a pretty high strength thing. I have 13 plus 1.
Okay. Do you want to try and also kick it?
Do I have some sort of battering ram?
I mean, you don't. You have, let's see. I think you have
I have an
acid?
Open lock thing. Can I? Is it a lock of some sort, perhaps?
You could look for a lock. You fail to see a lock. It just appears to be, like, sealed with some sort of wax or maybe glue to this wall.
Oh. I listen very carefully to the wood. Like, I put my ear to it.
I can disable device.
Yeah.
Oh, go first. Go ahead.
You hear the faint sounds of hissing coming from some other floor far off.
Uh-oh. Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? Spencer
has
later.
No idea.
You know, I saw the first Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, what'd you think?
It was good. It was good. It wasn't like original. And I mean, it was, but...
It wasn't that original?
Well, after seeing all of television biting it off for, like, years, like, you've seen literally every element represented in other things.
Yeah, it's like Easy Rider. When I watch Easy Rider, I'm like, what the fuck is
this?
Yeah,
or like awesome, but it was seeing all of it, like, throughout time. I don't know.
Spencer, you saw the movie Where I Live. What did you think of my hosting? When you were watching the movie, did you like it? Was my hosting good?
It was great.
I really
loved the party, Aaron. That didn't sound good either. I don't know how to.
No.
You know what, Spencer? Just throw it away. Just you're putting too much into it. Just I really like the party.
Wait, what?
Just throw it away. You're thinking about it too much.
I had a farty. No,
I
actually tried.
This is
not going to work.
I'll kick
it's fine. I think we're doing two different bits.
I kick it also, and I have 13 plus 1 strength.
Okay, sorry, I forgot
it. We're just kicking a wood thing right now.
You kick it, and you see a few splinters. You think it's almost broken.
Guys, it's almost broken.
By the way, I heard hissing on the other side of it.
Shit.
I use a rapid fire shot, and I shoot two arrows at the burning hands.
Shh, don't. My mom's here.
Sir, he's brokenhearted over wanting you to use something. I used two arrows. I shoot them at either side of the frame.
They strike the board and plant fast in the board.
I think you just made the board stronger.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, a guy yelled out burning hands. Can I cast burning hands on the board? I mean, casting burning hands on the board. It is consumed in flames.
Ha-cha!
You see a hole about 3 feet in diameter.
Ooh.
It looks like it goes some distance. I cast it. Does my light spell have a range to it? Like, can I cast a? You light? Touch and you cast it on an object,
oh,
and
okay.
Then it'll make it glow like a torch. I take a.
One of my arrows, put a light on it, and I'll shoot it.
Nicely done.
You have arrows.
Yeah, I mean, I have arrows. I have a hit song. I've got a couple. The hit song sort of arrowed to the top of the charts back in the day, but
I cast light on the tip of one of Christenberg's arrows,
and I then in turn shoot that arrow
through the hole, right?
Through the hole, yeah.
I behind him, I like mime it very sadly.
That
like,
was me yeah. That did it, not her.
But I mean, through my mime encouragement.
Yeah, awesome.
I watched this all happen and do a camera take and go.
And then Coco looks at him and takes her hoof and goes, meh, down.
I fuck Coco again.
No, you're in the hole.
Yeah,
Coco's
not,
up there.
I climb the rope and fuck Coco.
No, I took the rope down. It's my rope.
I take your Sharpie staff and I climb
Why
the
do you
staff.
Need?
He's just jangling for the rope. Sanctuary!
I shit on the ground for no reason.
Hey, firing. How about the lighted arrow that
yeah,
I shot?
Firing, firing the lighted arrow through
Let's
the hole.
Let's focus.
Yeah, but me fucking Coco's a B story. Let's get back to the A story.
For a brief moment, you can see the floor being lit up. There seems to be a mosaic scrawled across the floor. It's big and green, but you're not sure what it's representing. Because, you know, it glows and you're shooting it and then it plants in the wall. So but it plants in the far wall, and you can see what appears to be a wooden door, as well as a stone lever jutting out of the wall.
Do we see any snakes?
You don't see any snakes.
I pull the stone lever.
You are in a different room, so
you gotta
walk in.
Yeah, you
sorry.
Call.
Am I as a gnome? Am I small enough to squeeze through that small?
I
hole?
Think all of us can.
Yeah,
3 feet.
You could all go through, but not at the same time.
But Krista Berg has the power to detect traps.
Yeah, I'll go
not,
in.
Not in a 4chan sense.
I go in. I go in and I detect traps.
Wait.
Stand there.
That was a low roll, wasn't it?
It was actually, you rolled an 18, so that's a pretty good, I don't know, what's your, do you see, you should have a search check. Do you have, like on the skills, is there a number there?
Yeah, 9.
Awesome, okay.
18. It's nine.
It's still pretty good. Surveying the landscape, you see a few oddities. There's some scrape marks on the walls, and you could see a few cracks in the ruins where roots poke out of the walls, but they seem to be cut off. It definitely seems like there might be some trap about, but you can't determine its true nature.
Guys, I'm getting a weird vibe here. There's vines that are out of the walls. Somebody did cut the vines, but it seemed like they were attack vines.
Well, look where the vines are cut and see if there's, like, openings like, you know, that penitent man will kneel shit from Indiana Jones 3. Like, is there something that comes... Are they cut because something comes out of the walls? I'm just saying.
You could just see only the very, like, bits of them come out of the walls. Like, almost as soon as they come out of the walls, that's where they're shorn off.
Right, so something comes through here like a Dickens. Well,
I have a trap sense, too. Can I add on to that?
You can search for traps.
I search for traps.
You don't find any traps.
Shit.
For the
why don't you go fuck
rolled,
a horse?
A
why don't you go fuck a... Oh, you know what? I don't mind if I do.
All right. Well, let me see if I have a spell. Everybody back up out of here. I think I have a spell that I can pull that lever from a remote distance. And if I'm wrong about that, then I will have wasted your time.
So, Chris, do you have a lot of arrows?
Yeah. I mean, I got, you know.
Mage hand, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody back up. Back up. If you have to take a shit, go take a shit. Smoke them if you got them. All right. Everybody get out of the line of fire of this hole. I'm gonna cast Mage Hand on the lever from safely outside the entrance to that whole tunnel and pull that lever.
You pull the lever. At first, nothing happens, but then you see movement on the wooden door far down the hall. It rumbles and then falls forward. Phew. It hits the ground and shatters part of the mosaic, causing a few cracks to run down its length. You see behind the wall there is no doorway, but instead just a dead end.
What the fuck?
It's confusing.
This lever was a decoy lever, I think.
We're back in puzzle world. Like
we're running along. I think we can
examine the mosaic before we do it.
We look at the mosaic. Let's examine the mosaic.
At this point, only Kumail's in this room.
Oh,
fuck! You didn't wait for me to leave until you pulled the lever.
I said, "Everybody get back! Everybody get back!"
I didn't hear you.
Okay, so wait, you are now back in the room that you guys are in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
When he was like, "Get everyone get back!" I went back into this main standard room.
All right.
Well, I can go back in and look at the mosaic.
Okay, so now you want to go back in and look at the mosaic?
Yeah, I just want to see what
it looks like. There's a giant green serpentine, like perhaps a dragon. Definitely a dragon. I take that back.
Guys, it's definitely a dragon.
What?
At first I thought it was like a snake kind of thing, but it's definitely a dragon.
Its mouth is open wide in aggression, and you can see its mouth is just an entire slab of ruby crystal.
Quark should fuck it.
There's a ruby crystal. Can I remove the ruby crystal?
I mean, do you want to? At this point, you're still like near these guys, right?
I think we're running along. We should come to a cliffhanger here.
Well, no, let's let this play out. We came out at 8:10. It's 10 now. That means you know, we've put these people through worse. What are they going to do? Complain? I can't. You know.
Yeah, that is exactly what they could do.
Here, I'll fix it. Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Idle's here. No, he's not. He's not. He's not. Sorry. I thought that would bolster them for a second.
Would be really funny if Eric Idle did come out then, and you were just sitting on it like, we're going to go really long.
But he's been here every week just in case we went too long.
Yeah.
So he just comes with me everywhere.
He's the new me.
He comes up to me when I'm at like 3 in the morning, I'm at Del Taco, and they're like, sir, could you please make up your mind? I'm like, you know what? Eric Idle's here. And he comes up, hello.
The guy's like, I don't
Dan
know.
Wants a taco. Dan wants a taco. Dan wants a taco now.
That was omaji and mocking at the same time. So can I remove, should I try and remove the ruby?
Do it, Christopher.
Remove it.
Oh, it's a red ruby. This is my specialty.
Ruby in red.
Who's that?
Grabbing at the ruby, you pry with all your might. At the second you begin prying, you hear a rumbling sound behind you.
Guys.
You're the only one in the room at this point.
Guys!
Turning around behind you, you see that a large stone wall is rumbled down, blocking your exit.
Oh.
At the same time, you feel the giant ruby you've been grabbing move and jiggle a little bit as if it's trying to pull itself free.
As if it's trying to pull itself free from my hands or it's from the thing it's in?
From what you're doing. I spoke dumb.
So it's trying to re-get
it. You're making progress pulling the ruby out of the thing, but it's not out yet.
I dive through the into the room with him.
It's blocked.
Yeah. I was slashing with my sword in a barbarian rage. I tried to make it through to the room with Krista Berg.
Okay, so you strike the rock surface with your sword.
Right.
Feels useless.
I'm digging through. I'm trying to get my... I tunnel with my sword.
You make the lightest of scratches.
If I cast knock on it, does knock work on this kind of thing?
Knock wouldn't work on this. It's far too heavy. And
knock wouldn't work on you.
Openable.
So...
Slowly,
The wall starts rumbling towards you, threatening to crush you against the far wall.
Krista Berg, get out of there, you son of a bitch!
God, can they hear me?
Sure.
Guys, these are my last words. Lady in red!
Cliffhanger!
Okay.
Cliffhanger. Oh no.
Okay.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Kumail Nanjiani.
Thank you, Kumail.
Aaron McGathy and Spencer. That's a cliffhanger because now Krista Berg is just trapped in a crumbling room, and we're helpless to save him.
It's
right
crazy.
Now.
I mean, it's Joseph Campbell would be very proud of us. I think.
What stage would that be in a story? You think?
I don't know. The belly of the thingamabob.
What you doing there?
I'm just trying to get tangle free.
All right, Dan. Let's what do you?
Let's bring this ship into the station. Let's talk about what we learned.
What did you learn?
I don't know. Go with the flow. That's kind of easy to learn. I learn that every week by having a show that pays nothing and that I don't care if it goes good or bad. Like, I think the lesson just kind of continues. It's like D.C. Pearson said, this is the reason movies don't continue past the end. Like, as a hero, I'm kind of done. Yeah. I like these guys. I
now,
like coming
if,
here.
If you were really courageous, you would just gently put the mic back in the stand and walk off the stage and allow that to be the end of the show.
But let me ask you one thing.
No, that's not part. You were supposed to just say, the master walks away. The Lao Tzu said the master does his job and walks away from it. You should just walk away and leave these people with the confidence of knowing that you've done your job. What were you going to ask, Dan?
What if it feels awkward?
It'll feel awkward if you let them know it's awkward. You know, in the old days, the term break a leg comes from not from like actor superstition. It comes from make it to the end, because bowing, where you break your back leg, like you kind of bend your leg, that means make it to the end. And it's lowering yourself to the audience and saying, thank you for coming. So like if you just did a deep bow to the audience, like, thank you.
I thought it came from John Wilkes Booth breaking his leg after shooting the president in the head.
No, he broke an ankle.
Yeah.
That's like your leg.
I mean, the alternative is that you have to leave these people with some sort of special message. It's difficult. It's lonely. You're all by yourself out there, Dan. People paid $10. Spencer drove from Simi Valley to be here. There's a woman here from Estonia tonight.
Is that true?
No. The lady... Oh no.
In the beginning, there was nothing. Nothing had an eternity to decide that nothing was worse than something. Nothing split into a million somethings, a.k.a. everything. You were part of that everything. So was the person next to you. No matter who fires you, no matter whose laundry is left in your apartment complex's dryer, half dry, no matter who writes notes on your company's refrigerator's Grey Poupon saying touch and die, and then writes notes on the door of the fridge saying everything in here after Friday will be thrown away, no matter how many recycling bins you can't tell from regular bins, No matter how many pains in your nuts and your kidney and your forehead and the back of your neck, no matter how much hair you see in your shower drain, no matter what you look like from the side in the mirror after you take a shit. No matter what some crazy lady said about you that came back to you after you went out with her for a week and then you found out she said something weird about you because you ran into someone at Kmart. You are a citizen of Harmontown. You belong. You belong if you're human. You belong if you leave your isms and your itises at the door. I've never seen a sight that didn't look better looking back.
Thank you for coming to Harmontown tonight. Abed Gaith, Ryan Ridley, Aaron McGathy, Kumail Nanjiani, Spencer Crittenden. Once again, I'm Jeff Davis, and your mayor, Dan Harmon, everyone. Which within your will never come true. And Lee Marvin, everybody, singing our new closing.